today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Andrew Hopper, on pursuing adoption as the adopted children of God.
When we think about motivation for adoption, I was adopted, I want to adopt others. But the motivation also gives way to the influence that an adopted family can have in a community. They can become a pillar, a signpost of a kingdom that is coming.
Andrew Hopper next. Andrew Hopper says he cares deeply about adoption, not simply because he's an adoptive father, but because he's a Christian. He adds that adoption is first and foremost a gospel issue, not a personal one. Andrew Hopper is the author of Chosen, Building Your Family the Way God Builds His. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
What prompted the writing of this book?
Yeah, so, I mean, the adoption story is very near to our family. It's also very near to the heart of our church. Part of a mainstay and a staple through our church's journey has been we have a lot of adoptive and foster families. We're very involved also with families that are trying to get their children back after they've lost them from the foster care into the foster care system. And so there was kind of a natural tie there. And then our, you know, my experience is we did adopt, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit, but we adopted a child in 2017. Man, just radically kind of changed our view of building family. We have three kids from biology, and then we have one child from theology. Our theological girl, our chosen girl, came into our life in 2017. She has special needs. She has Down syndrome, among some other challenges that she faces, but she's an absolute light. Those two things have kind of converged and given us just sort of a passion. Of course, it's scripture born, and you know, it really is our, every one of us, it's a Christian, it's our story. We were adopted into God's family. So all that kind of swirling. And then a couple of years ago, New Growth Press reached out about new author acquisition kind of thing and asked me for some ideas. And this was sort of the one that I was most passionate about and they were most passionate about. And so here we go. And we've launched a book.
I do want to ask you a little bit about what your experience has been. I've heard that it can be kind of challenging. Can you tell us a little bit about what your experience has been?
I try really hard in the book, man, to shoot people very straight. When you adopt, you really are stepping into, I think, the hottest part of spiritual warfare. Satan loves the destruction of family. He wants to break families down. God wants to build families up. I would imagine that if I was the enemy, I would hate very little more than I hate Christian adoption, because in an adoption scenario, the evil one has already done a lot of work putting a child in a vulnerable situation. And, you know, when you really think about it, most kids come to faith, they learn about the king's table from their kitchen table. And so if I was the enemy and I had already seen victory in terms of breaking a family apart, I would hate to see one put back together and see a kid put in a Christian home. And so, yeah, with that in mind, we have to understand that there is a very high spiritual warfare element that goes in. I mean, people really struggle in a lot of ways. I think the enemy throws everything he can at adoptive families. And so understanding that, we don't want to romanticize what happens when a family brings a child into a home. You know, adoption is a beautiful thing, but it always happens on the back of tragedy. Children are not supposed to not be with their parents, you know, their biological parents. That's not the way God created the world. So there's always a tragedy that precipitates a beauty in adoption. And so there's going to be kids that carry a lot of brokenness from that. It's going to affect your other siblings. You know, we have three other children. And I would say with our adoption, you know, my wife has probably spent more time with our one than she has the other three in the last 9 years, because that's what the one needs. She is special needs. There's many nights where she needs things that, you know, there's a lot of demand there. Now, we also believe and trust that the Lord is going to restore the years that the locusts have eaten, right? And that he's doing something bigger than we can see. But it is hard, and we don't want to romanticize it, because we don't want people to be shocked when it is hard.
I was listening to World Radio. They were talking about gay marriage. And in the course of that discussion, they mentioned that one of the things, I guess, that our culture tends to say is, when the topic of children comes up in these sorts of relationships and in the LGBTQ movement, they say children will be fine. But what was pointed out that I thought was kind of insightful is the way that children tend to be casualties, you know, when we sin. The question is, what are your thoughts about that? But could you also maybe point us back to the roots of why Christianity is so uniquely pro-children?
I think there's a lot to unpack there. I would start with the second part, and then if you want to, we can try to revisit that first part. First of all, I love what you say. It is very pro-children. Really, I mean, you think about our faith for 2,000 years. I mean, it was the Christians that would run in and save children who were being abandoned in the Roman Empire. You think about the bubonic plague, all that. You know, you have these stalwarts of the faith that are pro-child. And, you know, when we think about the way God has created the world, when we think about the family, the fruit of family is children. So scripturally, when you think about what God called Adam and Eve to do, go and multiply, that is reaffirmed through Christ as he calls us to go and make disciples. Now, there's a new spin on that, that we are making spiritual disciples, but as is everything in the Old Testament, it is superseded in the new, but it doesn't take away the old. You know, and so, yes, Paul would say, hey, I wish everyone was as I am, single. I think there is a gift of singleness. But for the vast majority of Christians, we need to be thinking about making disciples of the world. But, you know, that doesn't negate the fact that we make disciples at home. And so you do see Christians that on average have big families and pro-child and want to adopt. And I think it's just kind of baked into who we are. You know, when you think about adoption specifically, moving beyond just being pro-child in general to being pro-adoption, you know, you just see examples of this through scripture. Esther was adopted. You know, you think about Mephibosheth basically being adopted by David to sit at the king's table. I mean, so you have these huge figures in our faith that show a pro-adoption sort of mindset. But I think even more than that, scripturally speaking, if you're a Christian, every one of us has been spiritually adopted. Galatians 4, Romans 8. We have been given the spirit of adoption. We are not naturally born into the kingdom. We are naturally children of wrath, Ephesians 2 says. We are naturally orphans. We needed something to happen to go from orphan to son. And that's what God has done through the gospel. Through the gospel, payment was made so that we could be adopted as sons and daughters. 1 John 3:1 tells us, what manner of love is this that the Father has lavished upon us, that we would be called the children of God? We are not the children of God. We are called the children of God. Something has to happen. That what happens is spiritual adoption. And so, you know, every one of us understands what it means to be spiritually adopted. Every single Christian came in the family one way. You were spiritually adopted. And so I really think it should make us a pro-adoption people, where we say, hey, adopted people adopt people. Chosen people choose people. What God has done for me spiritually, I want to do for someone else physically, in hopes that, you know, through that act, that they will be spiritually adopted by God as well.
It seems to me a lot of people see adoption as meeting a need for vulnerable children, you know, as a way to rescue children. I understand maybe your book also reframes adoption as an act of worship, displaying of the gospel, of course, and obedience. Would you tell us about how that is? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you think about the New Testament, there are two dominant metaphors where the gospel comes up. One is marriage and the other is adoption. I agree with you. When we think about motivation for adoption, I was adopted. I want to adopt others. But the motivation also gives way to the influence that an adopted family can have in a community. They can become a pillar, a signpost of a kingdom that is coming. You mentioned culture and gay marriage and all this kind of stuff. When our culture really sees up close, and I don't mean on the news and I don't mean on Facebook, I mean at the CrossFit gym, you know, when they see it in the school, you know, kids in school coming to your home because they're friends with your kids and they see it. When they get up close to a marriage that is biblically oriented, where a man is sacrificing himself for his family in a way that creates a response in them to follow him, where there is truly an act of sacrificial leadership that leads to full-on submission in a God-honoring way. When someone sees that and feels that up close, it becomes a testimony. Jesus laid his life down for us, therefore we follow him. Jesus wears a crown, but he first wore a crown of thorns. It's the same thing I tell guys when in premarital counseling. I'm like, guys, you wear a crown. You are the leader in this relationship. She's called to follow you. But your crown is a crown of thorns. And as you sacrifice for her, she's going to want to follow you. As you put her first, she's going to want to follow you. When someone sees that up close, it's endearing. I mean, it draws us. There's something of a heavenly realm that is being played out in that marriage. And it's an apologetic for the kingdom. Adoption is the same way. It's almost like a look people have when they're like, man, you guys had three healthy kids and then you adopted a kid. Well, did something happen? Like, were you not able to have any more kids? Like, oh no, we were fine. There was nothing physically. Or why would you do that? You know, that's people from the outside. They don't quite understand it. And it gives us the opportunity to be able to say, oh, well, let me tell you about what happened in my life. I was spiritually dead out of the family and God resurrected me, brought me into the family. He chose me. I want to choose someone else. It's really an apologetic. I'll give you an example. Our friends that have a son, he actually incidentally has Down syndrome as well. He's in his 20s. They adopted him from a Central American country. And Eddie's story was that he was born with all these deformities and was left in a dump. And a guy that was building a house down the road heard him crying, went and found him in the dump and brought him to an orphanage. And then they adopted him. These friends of ours years later. And when they tell the story, the father says, you know, it hit me when we were talking about adopting Eddie, that my story and Eddie's story were exactly the same, because I too was saved from a trash heap by a carpenter. Whenever we realize the gospel message in our life, it really pushes us to adopt others. But that adoption in that family becomes a signpost in the community for people to ask questions. It becomes what I would call an open door for people to say, hey, let's ask questions. So it can be very apologetic in nature.
Going back to some of the challenges, looking at, I guess, more specifics, just as we think about, you know, adoption, not getting too just immediately swept up into the, I guess, sentimentality of adopting children. Can you tell us about like what some of the hardest parts have been about being an adoptive parent? And how does the gospel provide hope and strength in those moments?
If I can, I'll answer that just as an adoptive father rather than an author of the book, maybe.
Sure.
Just because it's our story. You know, our story is a little unique. Our story is a special needs adoption. Not all are. A lot of the adoptive kids that come into our church, you know, they have trauma in their background. They have different things that are different than a child that is born healthy to a biological family, a Christian father and mother. For us, when we talk about some of the hard things, it's the uncertainty of health. There are things that happened in Faith Ann's first 9 months of life with her mother that I think come up to play even now. That's not just with Down syndrome, but other things. And so, you know, Faith Ann deals with a lot of health issues. We actually are dealing with another one. She's going to have a major surgery here in a couple of months. And it's just one of those things we've been praying against for 5 years. Now, we did see God do a miracle in her life, literally. She was supposed to have open heart surgery and has never needed the surgery. God healed her heart. And we prayed that he would do the same for some things she has going on with her spinal cord, and he has not yet. So that type of thing. We've taken multiple ambulance rides with one of our children and zero with the others, you know. So there's just that kind of aspect of it. It's very hard. Faith Ann doesn't understand a lot about what's going on in the world. You know, so those are some of the hardest things that we've dealt with. And then when you think about your other children, when mama has that much going on to take care of, you wonder, are the other kids getting what they need? And you have to trust that the Lord is putting this story together, and anything that is being taken away from them, he's putting back into them by being up close to an adoptive story and having a sister with such special needs. My kids are deep people, man. They're beyond their years because some of the things that they've had to deal with are just different than what other kids have had to deal with at their age. You ask how the gospel kind of applies to that. I really think anything in the Christian life in terms of sanctification goes back to who I was before Christ and what God has done in my life. That's the why. That warms the heart. Then the behavior modification comes. And so for us, looking back, I'm like, man, Faith Ann doesn't do a lot of things. She's had a lot of health issues. But, you know, I think about putting myself in the story of Mephibosheth and David. You know, Mephibosheth had to be carried to the king's table. That was my story too. I wasn't just lame in my legs. I was dead in my sin. Somebody had to carry me. And so when I put it like that, then anything that we're doing to pour out for her is nothing compared to what has been poured out for us. And it keeps the fire burning.
Well, my guest today is Andrew Hopper. He's lead pastor of Mercy Hill Church in Greensboro, North Carolina. We have been discussing adoption, as he writes about it in his book, Chosen, Building Your Family, The Way God Builds His. You mentioned that the adoption is important to your church as well. I guess to that point, what has your experience been as a church family supporting each other, you know, as presumably I would imagine maybe you've probably got a few families that have adopted. And I guess to that point, how can churches practically support families pursuing adoption slash foster care without just turning it into like another program?
We call them rope holders at Mercy Hill, and we get that from, you know, William Carey. He was father of modern missions. I'll go dangle in the pit, you know, in terms of unreached lands, if you, Andrew Fuller, will hold the rope. And he did that. Fuller, man, raised money and preached sermons and founded societies and all that to help with. And that's kind of what rope holders do. There's plenty of people that say, man, I'm not in the life stage. We don't have the energy. This is not what we're not called specifically to this. And I think we need to realize we don't need to guilt people into something. You know, guilt and shame are not going to be good enough motivators, because they'll take you a little ways for a little while, but adoption is something you need to go all the way for all time. So we need a better motivation. So yeah, we talk about holding the rope. We need people that are supporters. They support primarily in a few ways. Number one, we do prayer support. Number two, we do financial support. I have never seen a Christian adoption go unfunded, ever. Yet the funding is primarily the reason why people don't want to do it. So that's kind of an oxymoron, right? They never go unfunded, and yet that's the thing that gives us the most fear. So we need people to step up. Writing a $20,000 or $30,000 check for most people in their lifetime is something that they could do, not when they're 25 with two other kids. And so it's almost like God has bound the church together to say, hey, this empty nester stage has more money, typically, you know, just compounding over years and years and working and paying things off and whatever, but you don't have the energy. Well, this age group has the energy, but they don't have the money. So the church has to come together. We've got to hold the rope. It's almost like God has kind of tied us together generationally in that way. And then lastly, you know, rope holding is really just relational equity. It's being there when they need it. Some adoptive families are going to need different things. And so there is somewhat of a playbook. We actually have it in the book. It's an appendix in the book. Hey, this is how a church sets up a rope holder play. Would love for churches to do it. But the book lays very well for churches to grab and use as a resource. It's got questions and things like that at the end, like for small group or Sunday school. But really, rope holders are kind of there for like, man, I want to be a jack of all trades. Like, what do you need? You know, do you need someone to run your other kids around while you're at court appointments? Do you need someone to cut the grass when you guys are international? What do you need? You know, so that's what our rope holders do. But man, parents need that support. And, you know, anybody that's going into that fire, they need people to hold the rope for them.
I've heard from friends who are a lot more experienced in like the adoption slash foster care system that there is a lot of red tape to try to overcome, and it's not very easy to adopt. And I've even heard news stories that it's getting harder to adopt internationally. Well, I guess I would ask this question. As someone who's adopted yourself, what kind of resources would you recommend for people trying to navigate all of that mess?
Yeah, I mean, so you're right. Over the last 20 years, international adoptions have fallen by 85%. I mean, there's only a few thousand that happened last year in the whole country. That's just a reality. You know, I don't know that it's gotten harder. It's changing, and we need to be very careful, like anything that we do that is a good gospel work. If we enter it with a naive mindset, we can hurt rather than help. You know, I think When Helping Hurts is a very good resource and book across kind of any community ministry, just so we make sure that we're not causing problems. I mean, people can turn adoption into business, you know, and that's something that we've got to be very careful about. There are good local and national Christian adoption agencies, the National Council for Adoption. These are places where, you know, I think we need to find trusted people to help navigate all of this. But I would say this, one of the things that we do a lot at Mercy Hill is we harp on the vision, because we really believe that if people are longing for God to build their family the way that he builds his, they'll figure out the resourcing part. It's kind of like the old adage, if you want to build ships, don't divide orders and gather wood. Instead, teach your men to long for the vast and endless sea. We try to take the Bible and motivate people to say, man, what would your family look like? You know, I've been harping on Mephibosheth, but I think about that story, like, who is the Mephibosheth in your life that needs to be carried to the table? Is there a child waiting right now that needs you to call their name? If people get that in their heart and soul, they'll figure out the resources. There is a lot of resources, man. There's grants, LifeSong, there's churches, man. Our church, like Mercy Hill, my church, you know, if someone is a member of our church in a community group at our church and they step forward, the second their home study is done, we're going to pay for 25% of their adoption. You know, we want to be their first and best supporter. So yes, there's red tape. Yes, there's hard things, But man, we're entering spiritual war. To me, those things are worth it.
I don't want to discourage anyone listening by asking this question, but I am curious, just, you know, for the sake of thinking about it. No one family can just adopt all the children that are available for adoption in the world. So there's a line, clearly, where it would be prudent maybe to consider stepping away from adoption, maybe lack of resources or whatever this might be. How would families go about deciding, or how would you counsel them as they think about, is it prudent for us specifically to adopt?
I think it's a great question. I think 15, 20 years ago, adoption got really hot in the Christian community. When I was growing up, adoption was not demeaned, but it really wasn't discussed either. I think 15 or 20 years ago, that really changed. I think that is great. But one of the things Christians tend to do is overcorrect. You know, in some churches and some church circles, like, it went from, man, we don't talk about this a lot, to all of a sudden, if you're not willing to do it, you're not really a Christian. And, you know, that's obviously not right. And that creates a lot of guilt. And people get into it with, you know, a lot of naive thinking. And then they end up kind of feeling like, you know, hurt by the church a little bit. Like, hey, I got sold something that wasn't the reality. None of those things are good. In my opinion, what we need is not guilt, but we need to say, hey, the Lord says in Ephesians 2:10, there are works that he has laid out for every believer before the foundation of the world. A lot of Christians should consider whether adoption is one of those works that he has put out for them. Not for everybody, in the same way that the mission field is not for everybody. But everybody is involved in missions. You either go or send or you disobey. I mean, there's not anything else on the table. That's Matthew 28, that's Acts 1:8. I think in light of James 1:27 that we care for the orphan, then we want to be adoption-minded. We want to know that we are all called, maybe not all called to do it, but to support, to pray, those kind of things. And then there's going to be a select group that step out and do it. You really get into trying to discern the will of God in this for your family, and that's a huge topic. I am very much from the revealed will of God camp. I think the will of God is our sanctification. I think the will of God is laid out clearly in Scripture. And then we have freedom to live out our calling, our wiring. Romans 12, our gifting. I think those things match up with what God has called us to do in the world. So, you know, people can have different views on that. Maybe somebody has a dream that they're supposed to adopt a child. Man, God can do whatever he wants if he wants to speak to you in that way. But even if he doesn't, I think you could think about, like, man, is our family wired up for this? Do we have the resourcing for this? Do we have the emotional resiliency for this? Does our heart beat fast when I'm hearing this podcast or whatever, and people are radio and people are talking about it? Am I interested in it? Do I want to read books on it? When our pastor talks about this issue, do I just get like, man, we should do, you know, I think there is other things other than just God spelled it out in my Cheerios. You know, can we in wisdom, are people around us seeing this? I think all of that comes into bear on whether a family says yes or no. And I think if a family says no, they need to realize that doesn't mean they failed. It just means that God has something else for them.
Thinking about people that are not in the camp where God might be calling them to adopt, how can they adopt a pro-child mindset that is protective of children in this culture that, you know, we mentioned earlier, is pretty ready to sacrifice kids on the altar of our own desires and wants?
Yeah. I think there's a wide range of ways that people can be pro-child. It doesn't have to be adopt. We have members of our church that pray at the abortion clinic week in and week out. Our church has a ministry. Families who have lost their children to the foster care system. Most of the families that are involved in that ministry are not adoptive or foster families. They see the biological parents as the way that they can affect change radically in these kids' lives. So our church, you know, has a vision by 2030 to impact 1,000 children through our chosen ministries. That's adoption, foster care, and what we call families count, putting families back together that have been lost. The vast majority of that is not going to be from the adoption camp. It'll be from the foster camp, and it'll be from that family's count. I would imagine that we'll see 150 adoptions in the next 5 years through our church, maybe. That would be incredible. The rest of those 850 kids are going to come from foster and from the family's count ministry. So there are so many ways to be involved. And if anybody wants resourcing on even how to start a family's count or how you can be more involved with foster care in your community, they can always contact us directly. You can go to andrewphopper.com/chosen, and there's a way to contact us right from there.
Is there anything else from your book, even, you know, just things that you would like to add to this conversation that would round it out, that you would really like to highlight for our listeners?
I would close by just saying, you know, not every Christian is called to adopt, but I really do believe that more than are should. It feels like more than are doing it should be stepping forward because of all that God has given to us. I mean, we have the resourcing. Many of us have the relationships. We've got to kind of figure out if we're called, but then if God is calling us, are we putting that call on ice for the sake of our own convenience? It is hard. It is not for the faint of heart. I would say adoption is, it's frontline spiritual war, but at the same time, like, we can do it, man. Like, the Spirit of God that raised Jesus from the dead lives inside of us. He has given us context, wiring, and on top of that, literal spiritual giftings that wire up with things that he wants us to do in the world. And for many Christians, I think adoption, foster care, guardian ad litem, jumping in with families that have lost their kids can be part of that picture. And so I would just give your folks a final charge to say, man, consider this. Pick up the book. There are other good books, Orphanology by Tony Merida, Adopted for Life by Russ Moore. I mean, there's other good books out there. Like, grab some, get informed, and see if there's something that the Lord might be calling you to.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Andrew Hopper, author of Chosen, Building Your Family the Way God Builds His. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at the same time for another edition of His People.